Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Friday, April 14th of 2023. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Coming up on today's program, Boulder City Council met last night to discuss homeless strategies. Shay Castle is in the studio to give us an update. After that, we will go to Sports Talk with Jimmy, and then it's .org, our weekly look at local nonprofits. At the bottom of the hour, Connections comes your way. Today, Duncan Campbell will discuss the future of the Supreme Court. Then at 9:30, Meredith Carson will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead. But first, these headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
A bill that would lower the interest rate on medical debt in Colorado has received final approval and is on its way to Governor Jared Polis for his signature. KGNU's John Kellen has the story.
Colorado lawmakers have approved a measure that would lower the interest rate on medical debt to a maximum 3%. The bill would also require more transparency in the costs of medical treatment and disallow the collection of debt when patients are appealing a bill. Medical debt is one of the main causes of personal bankruptcy in the United States, according to the Associated Press. If the bill becomes law, the 3% medical debt interest rate would give Colorado one of the lowest in the country. Opponents say a 3% limit could impact a hospital's cash flow. A second Colorado bill would protect credit scores by keeping medical debt off of consumer reports. Supporters of this measure say that since medical debt is often unexpected, it isn't a good indicator of someone's credit worthiness. The AP says neither bill has strong opposition. While he hasn't committed one way or the other, Governor Jared Polis has hinted he could support both. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
A Denver judge has dismissed a lawsuit filed by Phil and Nancy Anschutz, who sought an $8 million tax refund. KGNU's Jack Armstrong has more.
Denver Court Judge J. Eric Eliff dismissed the case with prejudice, which means it cannot be refiled. Both the Anschutzes and Colorado Department of Revenue would also be required to cover both their attorneys' fees. The Anschutzes, the Colorado Department of Revenue, and their motion did not specify why the case has been dismissed. Lawyers tasked to review the case at the request of the Colorado Sun said that the case's dismissal is likely due to an agreement made between the state and the Anschutzes. The case was originally filed by the Anschutzes, though they may receive a tax return based off of the changed definition of federal taxable income in the Federal CARES Act. The CARES Act was filed in response of the 2020 COVID-19 pandemic as a relief package. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
The Biden administration will allow DACA recipients to enroll in Medicaid or private resources under the Affordable Care Act. Juanita Hurtado has more.
The White House announced Thursday that the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services will amend the definition of lawful presence for DACA recipients to be eligible for Medicaid and Affordable Care Act coverage. As of now, DACA recipients and undocumented people don't have access to Medicaid or financial aid for health coverage under the Affordable Care Act. There's no timeline given yet as of when the policy will be implemented and legal amends will be finalized. According to Colorado Newsline, potentially it could take years and legal challenges could also delay implementation. For KGNU, I'm Juanita Hurtado.
The Colorado Senate has unanimously passed a bill that would make falsely reporting an active shooter situation, a practice known as swatting, a Class 6 felony. Republican Van Winkle sponsored Senate Bill 249 after 17 Colorado schools were placed on lockdown in February when a rash of false 911 calls threatened violence. He said that swatting cannot be viewed as a prank and that the bill will hold people who make swatting calls accountable. The bill also makes a false emergency call that results in a lockdown or shelter-in-place order a Class 1 misdemeanor. A wildland fire in Park County that started Wednesday was sparked by a negligent homeowner on private property. According to a press release, the Park County Sheriff will be pressing charges against the homeowner whose actions were in violation of the local fire ban. Dry and windy weather conditions fanned the blaze, known as the Badger Creek Fire. It spread quickly to 41 acres, but was reportedly 100% contained as of Thursday when area residents remained under pre-evacuation orders. The House Judiciary Committee will consider a bill next week that would increase penalties for aggravated cruelty to animals when the victim is a service animal, police dog, or a police horse. Lawmakers drafted the bill after a 10-year-old canine member of the Jefferson County Sheriff Department was shot and killed while on duty, according to the Denver Gazette. Graffit, a German shepherd, died while helping Golden Police apprehend an alleged auto theft suspect at the Colorado School of Mines campus on February 13th. House Bill 1286 would strengthen a first-time charge of aggravated cruelty to a Class 5 felony when the animal, whether on duty or not, is tortured, mutilated, or killed. That means up to 3 years in state prison and up to $100,000 in fines. The city of Boulder is seeking community input on how to update its water efficiency plan. The plan offers guidelines for implementing the city's water conservation program, which develops water conservation goals with special consideration to community values and Boulder's supply system. County residents can offer feedback through a questionnaire on beheardboulder.org. Participants will be entered into a raffle to win a $50 gift card. Well, you knew it wouldn't last, and today the temperatures are expected to drop, ushering in rain, snow, and even thunder. In Boulder, temperatures will drop to about 38 this afternoon, then down to 30 tonight. In Denver, 39 in the afternoon, and a low around 32. In Fort Collins, the temperature will drop this morning to around 39, with wind gusts up to 23 miles per hour. Low tonight of 31. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Alexis Kenyon. Boulder City Council held a study session last night to discuss homelessness in Boulder. Among the highlights, city staff announced the future of a location of a new day shelter in central Boulder. Joining me to talk more about the meeting, Shay Castle of Boulder Beats is here in studio. Shay, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Shay, the day shelter is, it seems like, a long time coming. Can you tell me more about the day shelter? What did we hear?
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, Kurt Fernhaber, the Director of Housing and Human Services, announced the location, which is 1844 Folsom Street. It's a office building currently. It's going to serve as a day center and shelter with, you know, centralized services and such for about 12 to 14 months. And then they're going to move the day center while they redevelop it into a day center plus 50 units of permanently supportive housing, which is housing for formerly homeless folks with wraparound services. So honestly, much better than anything we could have participated. Having the day center and housing there on site is, it's best practice. Boulder's one of the largest cities to not have a day shelter still. So, big news in homelessness.
There's so much pushback about the shelter, and then there was so much pushback about where it should be located. It seems like it ended up being located pretty centrally. You know, Folsom Street, I think that's next to, you know, the Chamber of Commerce around that area. Is that right? How did that happen? And was there any response to that announcement?
Well, we really don't know. This is pretty typical of the city. I think when controversial sites need to be located, they'll do some work behind the scenes and then announce it. As to pushback, you know, you'd probably have to check next door for that. I did get a couple questions on Twitter last night of, like, do the neighbors know? Have they been notified? Which they will have to be notified if there's any zoning processes to do. I don't know what the zoning on the site is. It may allow a day center. And they'll absolutely have to be notified for the redevelopment, unless of course, housing is allowed there, which I'm not sure. I think it's a business commercial zoning, which may allow for some housing. But yes, I would expect pushback. There's always pushback to these kind of services.
And so what else was discussed at the meeting? And tell me about, you know, the tone.
Absolutely. So there was a lot. The discussion was divided into three parts, kind of our strategy, a subsection on family homelessness, and then, you know, a section on our removal strategy, which the city calls safe and managed public spaces, or SAMPs. It's hard to sum up, but a couple of highlights were some good and some bad. The bad, family homelessness is increasing exponentially. There's a lot of COVID era benefits that are expiring, rental assistance, you know, food assistance, and organizations like SPAN and EFA are seeing tremendous amounts of demand increasing. And the message was pretty dire from staff and those organizations of the money is running out and we do not know what we're going to do. BVSD has seen this year the highest number of homeless students in a decade. So that's pretty bleak. There's a really good system in place to take care of family homelessness, but it just seems like they're going to need a lot more money. And they have quickly responded and put together a group to work on that. So we'll continue to monitor and see what happens with that. On the good side, the city announced that Boulder County in itself is less than a year away from functional zero chronic homelessness for veterans. We have 21 homeless veterans currently. Reaching functional zero means we have fewer people entering into homelessness than we're exiting out. And again, that's specific to the veteran population. That's probably almost entirely due to a tiny home village being done in Longmont by the Veterans Community Project. But that is something to celebrate in a otherwise very dark meeting.
What were the other dark things that came up that you found particularly troubling?
Well, I think it's troubling but not surprising to me that, you know, Boulder's had a camping ban in place for 43 years. We're almost two years into the new removal strategy, which includes, you know, multi-million dollar investment, more police, urban park rangers, two internal cleanup teams. And as city staff admitted, the amount of camps continues to escalate. You know, they've since kind of reversed course. When they were discussing creating that new strategy, it was like, oh yeah, this will help take care of encampments. Now they're like, well, it's actually not working for encampments, but it's still working because of all the trash they're collecting and stuff. So I think that's a bit of saving face. But I think to anyone paying attention, it's very clear that that strategy is not working. That being said, with a day shelter opening up and I think the other interesting development is the business community and others. There's a lot of energy around pushing for sanctioned encampments now, which is something city staff and city council have been incredibly resistant to. But I think we're about to see a tipping point on that. And as we know from all the data and research and expert interviews, the only thing that really helps is more services. And as even city staff admitted in their notes, you know, we can ticket. That's basically our only enforcement tool. But without housing for people and places for people to go, it's really a pointless endeavor.
So when people talk about homelessness, especially in Boulder, they often bring up this idea of more services making a magnet effect. You know, people will come here for the services. And there is this idea that people who are homeless in Boulder are not from Boulder. They're just coming here because it's a good place to be homeless. Was that talked about during the meeting? Because it seems to come up, you know, in everything, every conversation I hear.
I think the staff is getting smarter about how they go about that, because it has been so thoroughly debunked. And I don't know how many times I can say this without getting frustrated, but every expert, every piece of evidence, every piece of data, people do not come here for services. They do come here, just like me. I'm not from here. Less than a quarter, a third of people in Boulder County were from Colorado. So people come here because it's economic opportunity is here. And I don't want to ignore the fact that people do come here. The majority of folks, 63%, who went through coordinated entry screening last year have been in Boulder County less than 6 months. But as staff admits, those people cycle through pretty quickly. We have four people coming in every day, four people leaving. So they're not staying here, and they absolutely do not come here for the services. They come here for the reasons that everyone else comes here. So I think staff has backed away from that a little bit, but it's still clear that they believe that on some level. And that's probably one of my biggest frustrations as a reporter, is I don't know how to reconcile. So I want to respect their expertise and the work they do, but literally everyone I've ever talked to ever about this says that's categorically untrue. So I don't quite know what to do with that.
Well, I think it can feel like that because you go to LA, you can see homelessness is rising, and it's rising everywhere. Yes, it feels like there are more homeless people in Boulder, but you go to other places and it feels like there's a ton of unhoused people there too. And so I I can understand why it looks like that. Absolutely. Shay, is there anything else that you want to share from the meeting that you thought was important?
Well, I think I'd like to pick up on that thread you just laid, which is homelessness is increasing everywhere. We know that homelessness increases with housing costs, and housing costs continue to increase as wages do not. And so as we see with family homelessness, that's a great indicator, because even though we can't see it because those folks are living with other families and stuff, but if family homelessness is increasing, it's almost guaranteed that other homelessness is too. And we've seen that in the numbers nationally and in Colorado. So it's not surprising that a bigger problem will need bigger and different resources to tackle it.
Shay Castle is the founder of Boulder Beat. Shay, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
The best part about sports is not the stadiums, it's not the food, and it's definitely not the teams. It's when the team does well and you turn to the complete stranger next to you and give him the crispest high five you've ever done. Hello and welcome back to Sports Talk with Jimmy, the best sports show here on KGNU, where we cover the latest and greatest when it comes to sports stories from across the Front Range. And today we have a story about crime. That's right, you thought this was a sports show. Today we're talking about a criminal, because there is a criminal in the Front Range area, and he has targeted a figure near and dear to my heart. That's right, Dinger the Dinosaur, the purple, cuddly triceratops that can be found at Coors Field, spreading joy and love to Rockies fans, has been attacked. Thursday, April 13th, Dinger was seen dancing on top of a dugout during a game between the Colorado Rockies and the St. Louis Cardinals when a man came sprinting from behind the dugout and tackled the prehistoric figure to the ground, and the assault was all captured on a video that was later posted to Twitter. Dinger was evaluated for injuries but was deemed to be okay. He will remain the healthiest dinosaur on the planet. As for the man that committed the assault, who was he? Why did he do this? We still don't know. Despite the entire act being caught on camera in front of an entire crowd of people at Coors Field, police didn't manage to catch the guy. They are still investigating to find this man and bring him to proper justice. His face was missing in the video, and somehow the man just managed to slip by everyone in the entire stadium. In all seriousness, this man is up on an assault charge. And you can't just go around tackling people for no reason. You can't even do that in football. That's at least 15 yards. I did do my journalistic duties and reached out to a few other mascots to comment on the assault, see what they had to say. But then I had the harsh reality check that mascots cannot talk. And I'd like to send an apology to Chip the Buffalo and Rocky of the Denver Nuggets for even trying. The Rockies did manage to end up winning that game 7-4 to put a happy ending on the mascot's assault. This, however, has not been the first time in 2023 that a mascot has been assaulted by a fan. In February, the Florida Panthers mascot, Victor E. Rat, was assaulted by a Tampa Bay Lightning fan. Now, if you look at the video, it looks incredibly staged, but the media reports are saying it is completely real. The fan ended up pulling the jersey over the mascot's face while yelling pro-Tampa Bay Lightning chants. Weirdly enough, the Panthers ended up winning that game also 7-1, and that's a hockey score. So what I'm hearing is that teams are undefeated when their mascots get assaulted. So maybe if you're not rooting for the home team, just leave the mascots alone. Statistics say it gives you a better chance for your team to pull out a victory. But for real though, guys, don't mess with mascots. Those guys have to deal with thousands of people per game, a lot of them are drinking, and they're in a hot costume. And they're probably not getting paid enough, unless you're Rocky from the Nuggets. So just give them a high five and enjoy the game, take a picture, and be nice, guys. And that is just about all I've got for y'all today on this segment of Sports Talk with Jimmy. I, of course, am your host, Jimmy Searfoss, advocating for the safety of mascots everywhere. Y'all have a good Friday, and tune in next week at the same time for more.
Time now for .org, spotlighting the work of local nonprofits and co-ops.
Hi, this is Chris Schultz with KGNews.org, and I'm here with Joanna Kagan from WOW Children's Museum. Joanna, you want to tell us a little bit about your organization and what you guys do?
So I'm with WOW Children's Museum. We are a children's museum here in Lafayette, and we are in our 27th year of operations, coming on 20 years in this wonderful Lafayette location in the old Lafayette Firehouse. Yeah, we're a hands-on children's museum, which means that we are all about play-based learning. So opportunities for children of all ages, but especially young children, infants up to about age 7 or 8, to experience dramatic play, science and engineering and technology, arts and culture in ways that are developmentally appropriate for them. And so we offer daily visits with our hands-on exhibits, but also special events and programs, including programs that go out into our community.
Speaking of that, you want to tell us a little bit about the programs you guys have?
Sure. So we are really proud of our programming, and we have a number of different kinds of programming. So we have education programs that have an emphasis on STEM, on science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. But we also offer programs in social emotional growth. For example, we have a program called Growing Friendship, which uses the planting and nurturing of seeds to celebrate collaboration and children recognizing each other's differences and celebrating them. Those are programs that we deliver to schools in classrooms or in after-school programs, at library sites, or in community gathering spots of different kinds. Then we also have programs that we do here at the museum for schools for grades pre-K through fourth grade, where students come here and again might sign up for a early science class, something like Young Inventors. Those are organized field trip type of programs, but they happen here at WOW, and we offer enormous discounts and sometimes free programming for Title I schools in those situations. Then we also have programs that are drop-in programs. You might come in and we have a program about celebrating the nature that's all around us. We have drop-in story time programs and drop-in art programs in our wonderful new Create space. And then we have regular programs that are geared towards certain ages. So, for example, every Wednesday morning, we have a really wonderful
Hello.
Opportunity for infants and their caregivers, whether that's mom or dad or grandma or grandpa or nanny or babysitter or auntie or uncle, to come in and get to spend a half hour with other grown-ups and then one of our experts. And each week we cover a different developmental topic, whether that's fine motor skills or gross motor skills or nighttime sleep habits. Being the parent or caregiver or involved adult in a young child's life can be really overwhelming. And so this program, Littlest Learners, is just designed to help community members feel like they're not alone in those key stages in a young child's life, and to have a really welcome and sort of joyful place to come together and compare notes and learn from some experts and share their baby's milestones. So that's an example of a very different kind of program,
Thank
not for
so
school kids,
you.
But for the littles in our community.
Thanks, studio.
And for their vested caregivers. We just launched our new website, and there's a whole tab about getting involved with WOW. Every donation, no matter the size, helps us. We welcome gifts, whatever the size. We also welcome connections. There are so many worthy nonprofits here in this region, and we partner with many of them. We love telling their stories and sharing our stories with them, and then looking for small businesses and large corporations alike who might be interested in seeing their name on an exhibit or sponsoring one of our wonderful special events, whether that's our Lunar New Year celebration every year, or Girls in Science, or our annual Dia del Niño, which is a free day, our sensory-friendly programs that are provided specifically for children with sensory processing disorders. None of those could run without community support. And so just going to our website at wowchildrensmuseum.org, there's easy ways to donate right when you visit.
You've been listening to kgnnews.org. For more information on this organization or to listen to other episodes, please go to news.kgnu.org.
And that's all the time we have today for the magazine. Special thanks to Benita Lee, Jack Armstrong, Eli Kalin, John Kellen, Juanita Hurtado, Jimmy Sirfoss, Chris Schultz and Shay Castle for their help with today's program. Stay tuned for Connections. That's after we join these BBC headlines in progress.